shielding our faces from the impact. It is such a strong gale that it threatens to lift us off our feet. Only Maggiano's clinging to the crow's nest keeps us from being blown straight into the ocean. At the same time, a wave smashes against the ship behind us with a force far greater than the storm's waves.
I see the Windwalker!
Maggiano calls out to me. When I lift my head to look, he points at a Balira that rushes past, coming close enough for me to see the coppery blonde curls streaming behind its rider. Lucent has someone else with her, and her posture is hunched as if she's exhausted. But it doesn't stop her from glancing in our direction, and as she does, another blast of wind strikes us. The impact hurls me off my feet. I collapse as another wave pummels the side of our ship, then stagger upright, blinking water from my vision. Maggiano grabs my arm again, and the world clears a little. Lucent's stunt has scattered all my concentration, and now my cloak of invisibility has vanished entirely, leaving my ships fully exposed. I force back my frustration, reach out again, and weave. Gradually, the ships disappear again into the storm. Off in the distance, Tamoran riders head in the direction of our second fleet as they close in on the capital's western border. My invisibility has thrown off the Tamoran line of ships defending the main bay, and as we look on, several of ours make it around the line, firing their cannons into the vulnerable sides of the closest enemy vessels. Maggiano guides us over to the side of the ship. He waves furiously at one of our passing Baliras.
Ours!
He shouts at the soldier riding it. The Balira turns in our direction. It flies lower as it nears the ship, then dives to the surface of the water with an enormous splash. The wave rocks us. Maggiano climbs on top of the nest's railing, steadies himself, and I follow him. As the Balira swims right up next to the ship, we jump over the edge and onto its back. The original rider gets off, diving into the water and climbing up along the side of the hull. Maggiano pulls me to him on the Balira's back. It is slick with rain, and I'm grateful for the strappings that give us secure footholds against its flesh. The Balira stirs restlessly in the water. It turns sharply, then surges forward in preparation to fly. As it does, a wave of ocean water soaks my legs. I suck in my breath. Sergio had mentioned earlier that something in the water seemed to be making the Baliras sick. Now I know what he means. The ocean feels wrong. There is a poisonous presence here, a darkness that seems at once familiar and sickening. I shiver at the feeling and frown, trying to pinpoint what it is. I have sensed this darkness before in my nightmares. I know it. The whispers in my head stir, excited. My thoughts scatter as the tether between Enzo and me suddenly pulls taut. I gasp. At the same time, Maggiano yanks back on the Balira's harness and launches us into the sky. He veers us sharply to the right, one of his arms locked tightly around my waist. I'm about to cry out when a burst of fire hits the space where we have been just a moment ago. Enzo appears in the sky a short distance from us. His dark hair whips back from the wind and rain, soaked through, and I am reminded instantly of the last battle between us, when I'd stared into the void of his eyes. My heart aches, even as I find myself hating him. I gasp again as his power pushes hard against mine, digging its claws in. The whispers snap at the threads as they threaten to turn me into a puppet. Then Maggiano strikes back at Enzo. He mimics the Reaper's energy, and I see strings of sparks flash from Maggiano's hands and whip toward Enzo, bursting into lines of fire on impact. Enzo's Balira jerks its head away from the flames, taking him farther from us, and the pressure against my energy lightens. I breathe again, then I lash out at him. Enzo cannot kill you without killing himself. He only wants to defeat you. I keep this thought close to me, and it gives me strength. I pull us sharply around to face him. At the same time, I grasp our tether and flood it with my darkness, my threads hooking into his heart, drowning his energy. He shudders visibly, his eyes squeezing shut. He tugs hard on his own Balira's reins, and the creature veers away from me. He begins to dive. His energy shoves against mine, hot and scorching, the fire burning at my blackness. I flinch. We fly lower and lower until Enzo skims across the water. Rain beats down on my face, and I wipe desperately at my eye to clear my sight. Through the tether, Enzo's energy rushes at me. The edges of my vision turn hazy, dimming for a moment, and a flash of shadowy silhouettes creep forward. No, I cannot afford to succumb to my illusions right now. Amid the chaos, I can sense Enzo's voice as if he were speaking directly to me. You don't belong here, Adelina. Turn back. His words send a surge of anger through me, and I push us to go faster. We are very close to the shore now, and several of our ships have broken through the Tamoran defense. The thought of victory dances in my mind. I belong wherever I want, and I will take Tamora just as I took Kenetra from you. But Enzo's fire scorches my insides, wrapping around my own heart, closing it in a fist of his threads. Another layer of sweat breaks out all over me as my vision blurs even more. I can see myself reaching out and beginning to weave something in the air. No, I cannot let him control me. You are mine, Adelina, Enzo growls. Turn your powers against your own fleet. I cannot stop him. My hands lift, ready to do his bidding. Then I feel the world rip through me, and I toss my head back in agony. A cloak of invisibility snaps over the Tamoran fleet, hiding them from my own. At the same time, I cast a veil of imaginary pain and hurl it at my own riders in the air. They shriek. I look on helplessly, unable to breathe through my surge of power as my riders fall from their Baliras. I struggle for air. The world becomes hazy. I force myself to focus on the tether. It is as if Enzo's own hands were tight around my heart, squeezing and squeezing until I'm ready to burst. I have to break his hold. A clear voice calls out above us. Adelina, stop! Even before I can lift my head and see him, I know that it is Raffaele. But he is not alone. In front of him, on the Balira's back, is a small, delicate figure lying limply against the giant creature's hide. It's Violetta, her hair a dark streak of silk in the wind. Raffaele's arms are wrapped securely around her. She is here, with them. For a moment, everything around me disappears. All I can do is look on as Raffaele turns in my direction and opens his mouth to say something. Something streaks past my vision. A white cloak. One of my inquisitors? I have time only to glance to my side before I see one of my own soldiers on a Balira, barreling toward us with a club raised. I don't have time to think or even throw my arms up in defense. No one does. The Inquisitor swings his club and it catches me hard on the shoulder, the force lifting me clear off my Balira. The whispers in my head shriek. The world closes in, growing darker and darker until I see nothing and hear only Maggiano's shouts coming from somewhere far away. Then, everything goes black. Thus we agree, should the day ever come, my troops, the Aristans shall take possession of eastern Amadera to the river's mouth, and your troops, the Salans, shall take possession of western Amadera to the same. No blood will be shed. Treaty between the Aristans and Salans, before Amadera's second civil war, 770 through 776. Adelina Amuteru. I wake at the sound of clinking chains. It takes me another moment to realize that the chains are on my wrists. The world sharpens and blurs over and over again, so I can only tell that my surroundings are dark gray and silver, that the stone beneath me is cold and damp. For an instant, I am back in the Inquisition Tower's dungeons. My father has just died, and I am destined to burn at the stake. I can even hear his chuckle in the corner of the room, see a hazy mirage of him leaning against the wall there, the gash in his chest torn open and bleeding, his mouth twisted in a smile. I try to shrink away from him, but my chains keep me from moving too far. A few mutters echo from a distance above. She's waking up. Take her before the triad. Be careful, those chains. Where's the messenger? We need his help. They're speaking to Morin. I can't understand the rest of what they're saying. The voices fade away, and a moment later, I feel the sensation of being lifted. The world lurches. I try to focus on something, anything, but my mind is too hazy. The whispers fill my head with nonsense, then scatter. There is a hallway and stairs and the cool breeze of night. Nearby, a voice that I know all too well. Magiano. I turn, yearning for him, but I can't seem to pinpoint where he is. He sounds angry. His voice floats near and then far until I don't hear him at all. They're going to hurt him. The thought sends every ounce of my energy roaring to the surface, and I snarl, lashing out blindly. I will kill them if they do. But my attack feels weak and uncoordinated. Shouts ring out around me, and the bonds on my arms tighten painfully. My strength dissolves again. Where is everyone else? The thought comes to me, and I try to hang on to it. Where is Sergio? My fleet? Where am I? Am I lost in another of my nightmares? My memory of the battle comes crawling back, piece by piece. Enzo's power had overwhelmed mine. I was attacked by one of my own inquisitors. This much I remember. The thought feels fuzzy, but it lingers long enough for me to process. The Sacharists, the rebellion against me. A rat, the whispers say. They always sneak through the cracks. The night changes to stairs again. We are outside, and soldiers, enemy soldiers, are leading me up steps. I lift my head weakly. The stairs stretch endlessly to either side of us and seem to lead to the heavens. Towers loom above, candles burning gold at windowsills, and in front of us, a series of enormous archways soar across the stairs. I look higher to where the stairs give way to a grand, elaborately carved entrance, framed by pillars and covered with thousands of repeating circles and squares. There are words carved into six of the tallest pillars. Loyalty, love, knowledge, diligence, sacrifice, piety. The words are Tamoran, but I recognize them. They're the famed six pillars of Tamora. Then I stumble on the steps, and someone hoists me higher. My head slumps. The next time I wake, I'm lying in the center of a vast circular chamber. A low rumble of voices echoes all around me. Rows of candles line the edges of the room, and light comes from somewhere above me, enough to illuminate the entire space. A terrible pressure pushes against my chest. The familiar tether between Enzo and me feels tight, the energy in it pulsing and trembling. He must be in the room. My hands are still shackled and my head throbs, but this time the world sharpens enough for me to think straight. I push myself up to a sitting position. I am in the middle of a circle drawn into the floor, the edges embellished by smaller circles. Three thrones sit along the perimeter, an equal distance from each other, all of them pointed in my direction. In each throne sits a tall figure dressed in the finest gold silks, his hair hidden behind Tamoran wraps. The Golden Triad. I am in the Tamoran throne room, seated before their triplet kings. I blink away the remnants of my hazy mind and glance quickly around the room. Soldiers stir and shift warily at my movement. Immediately, instinctively, I reach for my energy. The threads of fear and uncertainty in the chamber now call to me, and I lash out with a web of illusions. The chamber falls into sudden darkness, screams fill the air, and a whip of agony coils itself around the Tamoran soldiers closest to me. Several of them cry out. I bare my teeth, aiming next for the king's. "Stay still, Adelina." It's Raffaele's voice. I turn against the ground until my chains don't let me move any farther and search for him. He's standing next to one of the thrones, his hands folded into his sleeves. He looks grave, but his expression takes nothing away from his beauty. His hair is loose and straight tonight, black with sapphire strands that catch the candlelight, just as I remember him. He returns my look calmly. The colors of his eyes shift in the light. Beside him stand several archers, their crossbows pointed at me. "Release your illusions," Raffaele says. "You are here at the mercy of King Valar, King Emma, and King Joza, the rulers of the great empire of Tamora. Rise, withhold your powers, and address their majesties." My temper surges, even though I know Raffaele is right. My powers are still only illusions. I will not be able to lunge fast enough to keep those crossbows from hitting their target. I'll be dead within seconds. Thoughts flash through my mind. Why did Raffaele bring me here? Why hasn't he killed me yet? He could have let them unleash their arrows without warning me. And the most pressing thought, if Violetta is here in Tamora, why did he not use her ability against me? Why haven't they taken away my powers? But what really stops me from attacking again is a shadowy figure standing several feet away from Raffaele, his eyes trained on me and his hands resting on the dagger hilts at his waist. When I meet Enzo's stare, the tether between us pulls so hard, I gasp. I've never felt our connection so strong, so vicious. He seems to feel it too. Even from here, I can sense the tightening of his jaw, the shift of his muscles. Enzo's eyes are as dark as I've ever seen them. They do not glitter with the sheen of life that eyes are meant to have. They are dull and deep, devoid of the scarlet fire that once used to fill them, hard with emptiness. He stares as if he hardly knows me. He doesn't say a word. I wince again as our tether pulls tighter, goes slack, and pulls again. Just like during our battle in the skies, he's trying to overwhelm my power. But I feel the pain in the tether too, intertwined with my own energy. Enzo was injured in battle, and I can tell. I tense in anger. How dare you try to control me? Slowly, I release my illusions on the soldiers and bring my energy close inside my chest, protecting it against Enzo's. Several of the soldiers collapse to their knees, still trembling from phantom pain. Then I carefully stretch out both of my hands so that Raffaele can see. If he is studying the shift of my energy right now, he will know that I'm not about to attack. But I will not bow to a foreign power. My glare shifts to one of the kings, and I'm satisfied when he returns my stare. I'm tempted to look around at the rest of the chamber again, to meet the eyes of the other two kings, but that would require me turning around on the floor like a beggar. I will do no such thing here. "My fleet," I say instead, lifting my chin at the king. "My roses." "Sure's, dame," Raffaele says to the king. "Roseame." The king says something to Raffaele in reply. Most of it is completely lost on me, but I do pick out the taunting lilt he adds to my name. Raffaele bows his head to the king, then turns back to me. "The war rages even as we speak, Queen Adelina," he translates. "Our armies are sitting at a tenuous stalemate because your forces know that you are in our captivity. Another of your roses is also in our hands, unharmed, for now." Another captive. It must be Maggiano. He was the only one riding with me, after all, and I'd heard his voice earlier. My energy flares again, and Raffaele shoots me a warning look. With great difficulty, I swallow and rein myself in. Maggiano's life depends on how I act. It seems you were betrayed by one of your inquisitors, Raffaele says. One of my own. The fact that Raffaele had seen this happen right before his eyes makes me blind with fury. You planted a rebel in my midst, I snap. Did you not? I didn't need to, Raffaele replies. You would have lost this battle. I don't believe you. Raffaele's expression stays calm. One of your men attacking you. Is this uncommon? No, it is not uncommon. Previous attempts come blinking back into my memory, even as I try in vain to keep them away. The rebels are everywhere. I grit my teeth. I will have that traitor skinned alive. The king speaks again as Raffaele translates. What would you do in our place? The ghost of a smile appears on the Temoran king's lips. You would have us beheaded, I'm sure, and hold it up for our armies to see. I've heard that's what you do in other conquered cities. Perhaps we should do the same, dangling your body from the masts of our ships. That should end this war quickly enough. My heartbeat quickens, but I refuse to let him see my fear. My mind spins. How will I break free from here? I look at Raffaele again. What deal have the daggers struck with Tamora? And Violetta? Where is my sister? I demand, anger shaking my voice. Raffaele takes a step toward me. She's resting. He means she's not doing well. I scowl. You're lying. I saw her riding with you in battle. She was in no shape to fight you, Raffaele answers. I brought her with me solely so that you could see her. Is the reason why Violetta has not yet taken my powers away because she is too weak to do so? You've lied so often, messenger, I say with deliberate calm. Why should you stop now? For the gods' sakes, she doesn't deserve this, Mikhail mutters from the shadows. He looks different from what I remember. Thinner, his cheeks hollow, and his eyes are fixed on me with a burning hatred. Behead her and send it back to Kenetra. Toss the rest of her in the ocean for the fish. She's always belonged to the underworld. Perhaps that will fix everything. I frown, taken aback by such harsh words, and that they come from the same boy who had once praised my illusion of a rose. He had been so fond of Gemma. Any friendship he might have had with me ended the day I sent her falling from the skies. The girl I used to be stirs inside me, pushing past the Dark Queen to dwell on other memories. I realize I cannot recall the sound of Mikhail's laugh. Raffaele doesn't take his eyes off me. To my surprise, the three rulers seem to be waiting for him to speak. After another brief moment of silence, he steps forward. There are 1,000 things we could do with you here in our custody, he says. But what we will do is let you go. I blink once at him. Let me go? I echo, frowning in confusion. Raffaele nods once. This is his manipulation at work again. He never means exactly what he says. What do you really want, messenger? I say sharply. Speak plainly. We are at war. Surely you don't expect me to believe that you and the Temorans are releasing me out of the kindness of your hearts. In the silence, one of the kings turns to Raffaele and raises a bejeweled hand. Well, messenger, he says, his voice echoing in the chamber. Sa Beham, tell her. Raffaele walks closer. Adelina, he begins slowly. We are releasing you because we need your help. Of everything I thought he might say, it was not this. I can only stare at him in disbelief. Then I start to laugh and the whispers join me. You really must be going mad. Something about Raffaele's expression finally makes my laughter subside. You're serious, I say, tilting my head in a mock imitation of his familiar gesture. You must be desperate to think that I would work with you in the daggers. You won't have much choice. Your sister's life depends on it, as do ours. He nods at me, as does yours. More lies. Is this why you told me about her? Why you wanted me to see Violetta with you? So you can use her against me? I shake my head at him. Cruel, even for you. I took her in, Raffaele replies. What did you do? As always, his words strike true. This is what you wanted, Adelina, the whispers coax me. You wanted to find Violetta for your own reasons. Now you have. Raffaele continues in the silence. Your sister once took some documents of mine from the Royal Beldish ship. Do you remember what they said? He's referring to the parchments Violetta had shown me on the day she left my side. That all elites are doomed to die young, destroyed from within by our powers. As always, the thought of his theory chills me. I am reminded of Terran's stubborn wound, of Sergio's constant thirst, of my own illusions spiraling steadily out of my control. Yes, I say, and what do they have to do with me? Raffaele looks to each of the rulers in turn. They nod once in silence, giving him some sort of unspoken permission. As they do, Tamoran soldiers approach me from where they had been standing guard around the edges of the chamber. I stiffen as they draw nearer. Raffaele tilts his head at me, then starts walking to the chamber's entrance. Come with me, he says. Enzo shifts where he stands, as if he would accompany us too, but he stops as Raffaele shakes his head. His power affects yours far too much, Raffaele says to me. You need to stand alone for this. Others follow in his wake. I'm pulled to my feet by soldiers, unchained from the floor and guided along. We exit the chamber and enter a hallway, then leave the recesses of the palace and head down in the direction of the shoreline. The pressure on my chest eases, and I sag in relief as walls and hills come between the tether binding Enzo to me. It is a dark night. The only light comes from two slivers of moonlight I can see peeking through the clouds. The storm Sergio had raged over the oceans has dispersed by now, but the scent of rain still hangs heavy in the air, and the grasses are wet and glistening. I crane my neck, searching. Somewhere out there on the waves are my ships and Sergio. I wonder what he's thinking. I wonder where Maggiano has been taken. We keep going until we finally hit the shoreline. Here, Raffaele comes over to us and murmurs something at the soldiers. They pull me forward toward the water. I have a sudden feeling that they intend to drown me in the ocean. That is what this whole ritual is about. I struggle for a moment, but it's no use. I stagger forward. To my surprise, Raffaele comes to my side. We are standing on wet sand now, and I look on as the waves head toward us. The water and sea foam rush up the beach. I suck in my breath as cold water runs over my feet. Raffaele lets it rush across his legs too, soaking the bottom of his robes. Instantly, I feel it again. I'd gotten only a quick flash of the ocean's strange darkness during the battle, and then I'd left it behind. But now, with the world around me quiet enough that I can concentrate, I can feel the death in the water. The ocean pulls away, then rushes forward again. Again, it soaks the bottom half of my legs. Again, I gasp at the cold energy swirling in the depths. Raffaele looks at me, his eyes shining different colors in the night. You, more than anyone, should be familiar with this energy. I frown. The feeling turns my stomach, nauseating me with its wrongness. But at the same time, I realize that I look forward to each surge of the ocean, hoping for another dose of this dark energy. Yes, I say automatically, almost against my will. Raffaele nods. Do you remember the day when I first tested your powers? He asks. I recall your alignments well. Ambition and passion, yes. But most of all, fear and fury. You remain the only person I've met birthed from both of the angels that guard the underworld. Your energy is tied to the underworld more than anyone I know. This power I feel in the water, this is energy from the underworld. Raffaele's expression is grave. The elites exist only because of an imbalance between the mortal and immortal realms. The blood fevers themselves were ripples in our world caused by an ancient tear between those realms. Our existence defies the natural order, defies death herself. Queen Maeve, bringing Enzo back, has only accelerated the process. There is a merging of the two realms that is slowly poisoning everything in our world. I shudder. The water rushes forward again and I close my eye, both repulsed by and drawn to the dark energy. The reason I persuaded the Temoran royals to release you on condition of a truce, Raffaele goes on, his eyes trained on the night's horizon, is because we need your help to fix this. Temora is already feeling the effects along her shores. If we do not do something soon, then not only will all elites perish, but so will the world. I stare out at the horizon, unwilling to let Raffaele be right. Of course it's ridiculous. What do my alignments have to do with any of it? I finally say. Raffaele sighs and bows his head. I think we had better take you to your sister. I have tried every root, leaf, and medicine I know, but nothing has worked on any of my patients. Only two have survived, both with discolored hands. You mentioned a 6-year-old boy with scars on his face. Does he still live? Letter from Dottore Marino di Segna to Dottore Siriano Balio, 2 Junio, 1348. Adelina Amuteru. Violetta. I hardly recognize her. Her skin, once a rich, beautiful olive, looks ashen white, and deep purple. Bruise-like markings cover her arms and legs. They even run up along her neck. Her eyes are sunken with illness and her body is much thinner than I remember. She stirs at the commotion of us entering her chamber. I wonder if she can still sense our powers close by. Raffaele walks to her side, then sits carefully at the edge of her bed. After a while, I draw near too. Perhaps this isn't my sister at all, but some girl they've mistaken as her. Violetta does not have markings. She does not have pale skin. This can't be her. I move closer until I'm staring straight down at her face, studying her features. Her hair is damp, her skin dotted with sweat. Her chest rises and falls rapidly as if she can't quite catch her breath. Look what they've done, the whispers hiss, and I turn on Raffaele. You did this to her? I say in a low, ominous voice. My chains clink together. The soldiers that line the walls of Violetta's chamber draw their crossbows, the arrows clicking as they aim at me. These bruises on her arms and legs? I pause to glance again at the markings that scar her. You had her beaten, didn't you? You are using her against me. You know that is not the truth, Raffaele replies. And even though I don't want to believe him, I can see in his eyes that he's right. I swallow, trying to push down my own fright and revulsion at her appearance. How long has Violetta looked like this? I ask. I'd hoped that Raffaele wouldn't be able to sense the shift in my energy, but he tilts his head at me in a subtle familiar gesture, a slight frown on his lips. When I wrote you that letter, the markings had appeared on her just the night before. It's been barely more than a month since then. It's impossible for her to have changed this quickly. Our powers affect each of us in different ways, often opposite that which gives us strength. Raffaele replies, remaining infuriatingly calm. Violetta's abilities kept her immune from the blood fever's markings, just as Lucent's powers of flight made her light and strong. Now it has reversed. The meeting of the immortal world with our own is poisonous. My stare returns to Violetta. She shifts, as if able to sense my gaze, and as I look on, her face turns on the pillow toward me. Her eyelids flutter. Then she opens her eyes for a moment and they focus on me. I gape at the color of her irises. They are gray, as if the rich, dark colors that have always been there were now slowly fading away. She says nothing. I feel a wave of disgust. Raffaele can't possibly feel pity for Violetta's condition. His compassion always comes with a price, a request. "Because we need your help," he says, just as he needed me when I was a member of the Dagger Society and then cast me out when I no longer suited him. So why should I help a liar and a traitor? After everything the Daggers have put me through, does Raffaele honestly think I'm going to fight for their lives just because he's using my dying sister against me? I am the White Wolf, Queen of the Sealands, but to Raffaele, I am merely useful again, and that has made him interested in me once more. One of the other Daggers speaks before I can. It's Lucent, and she rubs her arms incessantly as if trying to stave away an ache. "This is preposterous," she mumbles. "The White Wolf is not going to help us, not even for her sister's sake. Even if she does, she'll betray us, as she always has. She's interested only in herself." I glare at her, and she glares back. Only when Raffaele gives a firm nod to her does she look away, cross her arms, and let out a grunt. Raffaele turns back to me. "You know the myth of Laertes, yes? The Angel of Joy?" "Yes." The halls of the Fortunata court had been adorned with paintings of beautiful Laertes falling from the heavens. Terran once recited it to me when I'd confronted him in the Inquisition Tower and taken Violetta from him. "Do you remember the story of Daenerys casting Laertes from the heavens, condemning him to walk the world as a man until his death sent him back among the gods?" It makes me think of Maggiano and his alignment to Joy. That Maggiano is probably somewhere down in the dungeons right now where I can't reach him. "The stars and the heavens move at a different pace than we do," he explains. "Something that happens to the gods will not be felt in our world for generations. Joy's fall to the mortal world tore the barriers between the immortal and the mortal. It was his fall that caused the ripples of blood fever that swept across the land. That birthed the elites." Raffaele sighs. "The ever-shifting silver of your hair, the sapphire strands in mine, my eyes, these are lingering touches of the gods' hands on us, blessings from them, and it is the poison that is killing us." The ghost of Terran's words comes back to me so strongly that I feel like I'm standing once again in the Inquisition Tower, staring up into his ice-colored eyes. "You are an abomination. The only way to cure yourself of this guilt is to atone for it by saving your fellow abominations. We are not supposed to exist, Adelina. We were never meant to be." And suddenly, I know why Raffaele needs my help. I know it before he can say it. "You need my help to close the breach between our worlds." "Everything is connected," Raffaele says. A phrase that Enzo once said to me when he was alive. "We are connected to the point where Laertes fell, where immortality meets mortality. And in order to fix what has gone wrong, we need to seal the place that birthed us with the alignments that we each bear." "We need to give back our powers." "We are children of the gods," Raffaele finishes, confirming my fear. "Only we can enter the immortal realm as mortals." "And if I refuse?" I reply. Raffaele's quiet nature has always both calmed and unnerved me. He lowers his eyes. "If you don't," he replies, "then in a matter of a few years, The poison of the immortal world will kill everything. I look back down at my sister, Violetta's body collapsing under the weight of her powers, Lucent's hollowing bones, Sergio's eternal thirst and exhaustion, Terran's never-healing wounds, and me. My worsening illusions, my nightmares within nightmares, the whispers in my head. Even now they are chittering, chittering, chittering. No, I say. The voices hiss at my sister's body. You owe her nothing, they growl, stirring now and climbing out of their caves. Raffaele watches me. You are running out of time, he says. She will not last long like this. I glare at him. And what makes you think I care if she dies? You still love her. I can sense it in you. You always think you know everything. Well, don't you? No. Raffaele narrows his eyes. Then why come to Tamora to find her? Why ask for her? Why hunt for her all over the world as you conquer your new lands? At that, the whispers turn into shouts. Because she doesn't get to turn her back on me. I lash out so suddenly with my illusions that the archers along the walls don't even have time to react. My powers wash across the others in a wave, knives in your hearts, twisting, barbed, tearing, barely within my control. I can even feel the pain of it myself, as if it had turned its head on me too and sought my own heart. Lucent gasps in agony, stumbling backward with wide eyes, while Raffaele clutches his chest with one hand turning pale. The crossbows draw back. Quickly! Raffaele manages to call out. Something heavy hits me. Not an arrow. I manage to think before I'm knocked to the floor. All the air rushes out of me. I struggle to breathe, and in this instant, my powers flicker out, scattering from my grasp. Someone has managed to throw a net, I realize dizzily. No, it had dropped from the ceiling. Raffaele had guessed how I might react. Rough hands grab my arms and yank them painfully behind my back. I struggle to gather my power again and strike, but the whispers have grown so loud and disorienting that I cannot focus. Leave this place and finish your conquest, the whispers snap. Show him why he will regret what he's done to you. Violetta stirs restlessly in her bed, oblivious to our presence and lost in some nightmare of her own. I hate you. I throw the thought at her, willing her to hear it. I think of how she had cowered in our childhood, unable to protect me, and how she had turned on me before leaving my side, trying to take away something that is mine by right. I try to hold these images in my head as Raffaele orders the Tamoran soldiers to take me away. I've become so good at remembering these moments during the past year, letting them strengthen me, recounting Violetta's failures in order to push my power to new heights. But now, the images that flood my head are of a different sort. I see Violetta and me running through the tall grasses behind our old estate, hiding on summer afternoons in the shade of giant trees. There's Violetta wrapping her arms around me on a moonlit floor, holding me as I sobbed for Enzo. And Violetta curling up beside me during a thunderstorm, trembling. Her hands in my hair, braiding flowers between the locks. I don't want to see these. Why can I not clear them from my vision? If she dies, you lose yourself. This time it is not the voice of my whispers. It is my own voice. If you do not go, you will die too. As the soldiers force me to my feet, Raffaele takes a step closer. We were never meant to exist, Adelina, he says, and we will never exist again, but we cannot take the entire world with us. He meets my gaze, no matter how it has wronged us. Then he nods at the soldiers. I try to lash out again, this time with Raffaele in my sights, but something strikes the back of my head and the world goes dark.
Raffaele Laurent Bessette. When Raffaele checks on Violetta again that evening, she is awake, Her fever lowered somewhat. Even though she had been unconscious while Adelina was in the room, it seems as if the presence of her sister had offered Violetta some semblance of comfort, however small. Something that helped her fight back against the deterioration of her body. It is the opposite effect that Adelina seems to have on Enzo. Raffaele had left the prince pacing restlessly in his chambers. The dark energy surrounding him had felt elevated by Adelina's nearness, agitated and ready to strike. "She'll never agree," Lucent says to Raffaele, as they and Mikel look over the Timoran ship at port, still bustling with sailors loading cargo. "And even if she does, how will we travel with the White Wolf? I can hardly stand being around her. Can you?" "It's a shame I ever taught her how to focus her illusions," Mikel says. "You heard what happened in Violetta's chamber. She attacked the soldiers and all but tried to kill you." He nods at Raffaele. "You said yourself that she is beyond help. What makes you think a voyage with her will work?" "I don't," Raffaele concedes. "But we need her. None of us link with Fury, and we will not be able to enter the immortal world without each of the gods' alignments. Not if the legends are at all true." "This could just be a waste of time," Lucent says. "You're placing your bets on a theory of something that, according to myth, happened hundreds of years ago." "Your life depends on this, Lucent," Raffaele replies. "As much as any of ours. It is all we can do, and we have very little time to do it." Mikel sighs. "Then it depends on whether or not Adelina thinks her life depends on this too." Raffaele shakes his head. "If Adelina refuses, we will have to force her hand. But that is a dangerous game to play." Lucent looks ready to reply, but in that instant, a young guard hurries up to them. Clutched in his hand is a parchment, freshly arrived. "Messenger," he says, bobbing his head once at Raffaele before handing him the paper. "A new dove. This is from Beldane, from the Queen." "Queen Maeve." Raffaele exchanges a look with Lucent and Mikel, then unfurls the message. Lucent falls silent, and her eyes widen as she peers at the paper with the others. Raffaele reads the message, then he reads it again. His hands tremble. When Lucent says something to him, he doesn't hear it. Instead, it sounds like a muffled underwater sound, coming from somewhere far away. All he can hear are the words written on the parchment, as clearly as if Maeve were standing with them and telling him herself. "My brother Tristan is dead." Raffaele looks back toward the palace. A jolt of fear rushes through him.
"No. Enzo," he whispers.
And before the others can call him back, he turns toward the palace and runs.
Lost life by stab wound and sacrificing self for the sake of his child. May he rest in the arms of Moritas, adrift in the underworld's eternal peace. Epitaph on gravestone of Tau Sakibo. Adelina Amuteru. I am alone in my dungeon cell. Illusions are useless if I have no one to affect but myself, and so I do nothing but curl up on the ground while soldiers stand on the other side of the wall beyond my iron door, out of my reach. Unlike the dungeons of Estensia, my cell is suspended high above the city in a maze of spiraling towers that funnel wind through their passages like maelstroms. A lone window sits high above me. Through it, weak slants of moonlight illuminate parts of the floor where I'm now huddled. I stay very still. The wind outside howls, taking on the tone of the whispers in my head. I try to rock myself to sleep. It has been far too many days since I last took my herbs to calm the whispers, so I can feel the madness creeping forward again, threatening to wrestle control from me. I wish desperately that Maggiano were with me. Something creaks. My prison door. I raise my head to stare at it. The guards, they must be delivering my supper early. A sharp pain tugs on my chest. I frown as the door slowly opens, and then realize, somehow, at the last moment, that on the other side of the door are not the guards at all. It is Taren and his inquisitors. Impossible. He is my prisoner trapped in Estenzia's dungeons. My heart leaps into my throat. I scramble to my feet, stumble forward, and attempt to close the door. But no matter how hard I throw myself against it, Taryn edges in bit by bit until I can see his mad eyes and blood-soaked wrists. When I look away and back at the interior of my dungeon cell, I see my sister's body lying in one corner, her face pale and deaf, lips drained of color, eyes staring vacantly at me. I jerk awake. Outside, the wind is howling. I tremble against the stones of my prison floor until I hear my door creak open again. Again, I rush toward it in an attempt to keep the Inquisitors out. Again, they push back. Again, I look away to see Violetta dead on the floor, eyes pointed at me. I jerk awake. The nightmare repeats itself over and over. Finally, I wake with a terrible gasp. The wind is still howling outside my prison door, but I can feel the cold floor beneath me with a solidity that tells me I must be awake. Even so, I can't be sure. I sit upright, trembling, as I look around my cell. I am in Tamora, I remind myself. Violetta is not in here with me. Taryn is in Estenzia. My breath fogs in the moonlit air. After a while, I gather my knees up to my chin and try to stop shivering. In the corner of my vision, ghosts of clawed, hoofed figures move in the shadows. I look out at the night sky through the barred window and try to picture my ships waiting for me out at sea. Just agree to Raffaele's request. Agree to help the daggers. Indignation rises in my chest at the mere thought of caving to Raffaele's demands. But if I don't, I will stay helpless in this cell, waiting for Sergio to lead my army to storm the palace. If I simply say I will help them, they will have to agree to a truce and let me free. They'll free Maggiano. The thought turns round and round in my head, gaining momentum. Raffaele has betrayed you many times in the past. Why not use this as a chance to betray him? Agree. Just agree. Then you can strike them when they least expect it. It seems too easy to be true, but it is my only way out of this prison. I look upward and try to gauge when the next rotation of soldiers will stand at my door. The strings tug again, hard. A spike of pain shoots through me. I clutch my chest, frowning. This is what I'd felt in my dream, with the current yanking me down. But my nightmare has already ended. A sudden fear hits me, and I squeeze my eye tightly shut. Perhaps I am still in one. The tug again. This time it hurts enough to make my body seize. I glance toward the door. The pull is from Enzo. Now I recognize the fire of his energy, his barbs in my heart as surely as mine are in his. Something is wrong. When the tug comes again, the door creaks, and then it opens. The guards are not waiting there. Instead, it is Enzo, swathed in shadows. My breath catches in my throat. His eyes are pools of black, completely devoid of any spark of life. His expression is non-existent, his features seemingly carved from stone. My gaze darts down to his arms. They are exposed tonight, a mass of destroyed flesh. My heart freezes. Did Raffaele send him here? He must have told the guards to step aside and let him in. I stare at him, unsure what to do next. "Why are you here?" I whisper. He says nothing in return. I can't even tell if he's heard me. Instead, he continues to walk forward. His gait seems off, although I can't quite put my finger on why it looks strange. There is something unrealistic about it. Something stiff and uneven. Inhuman. He is gripping daggers in both hands. I must still be in a nightmare. Enzo narrows the black pools of his eyes. I try to push through our tether to read his thoughts, but this time I feel nothing except an all-consuming darkness. It is beyond even hatred or fury. It is not an emotion at all, but the lack of all emotion and life. It is death herself, extending out through Enzo's vessel of a body and pulling me forward through the threads of energy that bind us. The touch feels ice cold. I shudder, pressing myself hard against the wall. But the cold claws of Enzo's changed energy continue to reach for me, drawing closer and closer until they hook into me and pull tight. My energy lurches. The whispers in my head burst free and roar in my ears. I cry out at the overwhelming sensation. The control I have over my energy starts to slip and the whispers gradually take on Enzo's voice. And then, a new tone, one from the underworld. What do you want? I scramble backward against the floor, dragging my chains with me until I can go no farther. Enzo approaches me until we are separated by nothing but his armor and my robes. His soulless eyes stare down at me as he sheathes his daggers. His hands clamp down on the chains that encircle my wrists, and in a moment that reminds me of the day he had rescued me from the stake, he heats the chains until they turn white hot. They clatter to the floor. His lips curl. You have something that is mine, Enzo murmurs in a voice not his own. It resonates within my very core, and I immediately recognize it as the voice of Moritas, speaking through the underworld. She has come for Enzo. The tug between us pulls taut again, making me cry out in pain. She will kill me in order to take him back. Why don't you jump, little wolf? He whispers. And suddenly, I feel a desire to step out of my cell, walk up the rampart, and fling myself from the tower. No. Panic flutters in my mind as my energy turns on me and Enzo gains control. An illusion wraps around me. I'm no longer on the top of this tower, but clutching the skeletal hands of the goddess of death herself, hanging desperately on as I float in the waters of the underworld, trying not to drown. Cold hands pull at my ankles. You belong here, Moritas says, her featureless face leaning down to me. You always have. Don't let me go, I beg. The words come out silent to my ears. Magiano, I cry. This must be a nightmare, but I can't wake up. It can't possibly be real. Perhaps he will be nearby and save me from my illusion as he always does. Magiano, help me. But he isn't here. I blink and now I am back in the prison tower, walking out of my cell's ajar door to stand on the wind-whipped steps outside. Enzo follows behind me as I continue forward. The hands of death grasp my heart through our tether, and the ice of her touch burns me. Fires protected inside, colored lanterns illuminate the path with spots of light. I squint in the darkness, then turn my face to where the stairs wind up and around my cell. I take a step forward, one after another. A narrow gap between the cells appears, where a thin rampart overlooks the night landscape and then the ocean beyond. I strain to see any sign of my ships, but it is too dark. The wind numbs my fingers. I approach the rampart and grip the ledge with both hands. The tether pushes me forward, urging me over the wall. The whispers shriek over the wind. Why don't you jump, little wolf? Enzo! A clear voice cuts through my illusion. The underworld wavers, then vanishes in a whirlwind of smoke. I'm back at the tower, crouched on the edge of the ramparts. Enzo turns around to see Raffaele standing at the stairs behind us, a crossbow in his hands. He is pale, his face drawn with fear, his lips tightened into a determined line. The wind whips his hair into a furious river, and his pale robes stream behind him in waves of silk and velvet. Had he woken too at the strangeness of Enzo's energy? His eyes dart in my direction before returning to the prince. Raffaele lifts the crossbow higher. He isn't aiming it at me. Enzo, he says again, his eyes shine wet in the night. Leave her. In the past, Enzo would have wavered. His eyes would clear, the pools of dull darkness making way again for those I know so well, dark and warm, slashed with bright scarlet. But even Raffaele's presence this time does nothing to clear the death from Enzo's gaze. I feel nothing of Enzo at all in our tether. Before I can think anything else, Enzo turns away from me, reaches for a dagger, and lunges at Raffaele. The hands of